What are you wearing?
A bear suit. Wearing a bear suit, Joel.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Mike, I have a confession to make.
Okay.
To you.
All right.
So, unbeknownst to you and all of Rose Kingdom, I made a special call into Dayton Moore, and I said, Dayton, if you can this offseason, please space out all your major trades and signings roughly a week apart so we have something to talk about every week on the podcast. And thankfully, he's such a nice guy. He obliged.
Excellent.
Yes, right? It certainly feels that way, though, doesn't it? It seems like every week we always talk about what we're going to talk about on the show. Oh, we got nothing, and then something invariably comes up that gives us a little something. You know, starting back with the Wade Davis trade, into the Jerod Dyson trade, and then now we have the most recent set of news, and what would probably bring the biggest smile to the face of most Royals fans, given this is news about keeping someone as opposed to letting them go or sending them off for somebody new. Fan favorite, all around fantastic guy, and someone who has turned himself into a very good, possibly great left-handed pitcher. Danny Duffy signs an extension with the Royals earlier this week, Monday. It was the extension is for 5 years, $65 million, $5 million of which is only due to him, or only $5 million of which is due to him this year. We'll hit that a little bit more later on, but the average annual value at $13 million. You know, if I remember correctly, Mike, we talked about this earlier in the season when Duffy was on his really, really hot stretch, kind of in mid-July, August, and we were, you know, what would it take? What would you do to sign him right now? What would you offer? What would it take? And I think what we were kind of discussing at the time that had been kind of thrown out there was 5 years, $80 million.
I think like Passan brought that up, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's when he was, you know, Cy Young type talk. And then he kind of cooled off a little bit and, you know, kind of normalized, if you will. And so, of course, you know, if you cool down from your peak, then, you know, the money's going to cool down a little bit. And so it was probably smart of the Royals to wait a little bit. And, you know, then his price came down. And Duffy has said he's not been shy about saying how much he wants to stay in Kansas City, wants to be here. I don't think any player, no matter how much they want to be in a certain place, would shortchange themselves the money. They'd be dumb if they did. I wouldn't begrudge any pitcher for taking, you know, especially if it was considerably more money somewhere else. But all the same, you know, as much as is humanly possible for an athlete in his position, it seems like Danny Duffy has wanted to stay in Kansas City and made that a priority. And the Royals wanted him to be in Kansas City. And after what he showed last year, has also made that. They also seem to make that a priority, which is evidenced by the two agreeing on a deal, 5 years, $65 million. Mike, what are your thoughts?
You know, we try – like, I mean, obviously we're fans.
Right.
So, I mean, you're in Kansas City. I'm just down the road. We've both been Royals fans for a long time. Anybody who listens to us knows this. And there's always going to be a little bit of fan, no matter what, in anything that we're doing, podcast or blogging or whatever. And so, as a fan, I'm thrilled. Like, I mean, you look at what Danny Duffy's done over his career. He's been a top prospect. He's been you know, he's one of the guys who broke out in 2011. He's had some ups and downs, but, you know, 2014 had a pretty good season. And last year, obviously a breakout. And so to see him, one, have the breakout, and two, end up staying, I'm really happy. I'm happy for the Royals because they get a guy who may be on the verge of really turning into something. I'm happy for Duffy because he gets paid. You know, this is a guy in 2010, you'll remember, he stepped away from the game for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like, you know, whatever he did back then that got him back into the game, now he's rewarded for it. And, you know, I think that episode really kind of, really earned some favor for him, you know, from the organization. Mm-hmm. You know, that they
speaking
really...
of which, sorry, I don't want to derail, but did you see that Minda Haas story that she shared on on Twitter? That
just Duffy in Omaha really like helping out a young kid. I mean, what he's just, you know, we've talked to him a couple of times, and mm-hmm. you know, typically athletes, you know, they'll give the canned response, and Duffy really, you know, it's not like he's Nuke LaLoosh, but he's not exactly a cliched guy. You know, he's thoughtful, but he's going to be, you know, pretty forthcoming in a lot of cases. And
even when he is cliche, it still comes off as genuine.
Right.
And
right.
It is genuine. That's the thing.
That's a good word for it. He's genuine. He's humble. He's probably one of the best guys in baseball, like just as guys. And I'm biased, and I freely admit the bias, but a lot of people will tell you that. A lot of people who in the media, a lot of other ball players. You know, I'm curious about like how his phone lit up when the news came out, because I'm sure that he's got a lot of guys in that clubhouse who are firmly on his side. So for five years, you know, just setting aside the money, just the actual extension of it, you know, it's the Royals keeping a guy. So the objective mind frame is like, oh, cool, you've got this really good pitcher who has great upside, even if he's just a reliever down the line. But great upside as a starter, and you get to keep him through what should be his peak years. You know, that never happens for the Royals and starters. Greinke, I guess, you kind of got. But he still, you know, he had his Cy Young season in 2009 and demanded to be traded. So doesn't seem like that's probably going to be a thing that Duffy does.
You got his best year, but not necessarily through his prime.
Yeah. Yeah, and Duffy, if this is his, you know, 2016, if that's the peak, all right, but he still should be a pretty good starter for the next 5 years. And if he just improves or maintains, I mean, he's a pretty strong starting pitcher for the Royals, which is something that they've desperately needed to develop for themselves. And now it seems like they have, and they've locked him up, and the money is good too. So, you know, $65 million... that's a lot in real people money, but it's not a ton in baseball money. And if you're looking at, you know, even in 2017, if you ignore that it's the $5 million and you say, okay, 4 years, $60 million, $15 million for even a league average starter is kind of becoming the going rate. And you look at what Ian Kennedy got, 5 years, $70 million, and he's a pretty average guy. You look at what Edinson Volquez got from the Marlins, 2 years, $22 million. And that was after a Guthrian season last year where he just was not good. And he still got $11 million a year. So you're paying Danny Duffy $15 million a year where he could be something special. Maybe not into like Major League Baseball ace, but certainly a legit number one guy to lead the Royals rotation. And you're getting that at a pretty decent kind of hometown discount because, you know, he wanted to stay. And, you know, they just kind of got it done. You know, there's no trade. There's no trade clause. There's no, like, option years. There's no trademarked mutual option at the end. It's just straight up 5 years, $65 million bucks. That's it. You know, cut and dry, real simple. They just kind of got it done. And you know, pretty nice little uplift. Craig Brown wrote today, called it the first win of the offseason. And I think it's one of those moves that, you know, baseball guys and even like baseball analysts, like sabermetric guys and you know, Dan Zimborski and Dave Cameron from ESPN and Fangraphs respectively, you know, who are often tough on the Royals, really like this deal. And so if you win over the Saber guys, it's probably, well, maybe it's a good sign. Maybe it's not a good sign, but but here's the last thing, and then I'll let you share your thoughts. Zimborski, who does Zips, and we've had him on the show. He's a fun dude.
Yes.
Zips projected Danny Duffy, like he does their Zips projection and compares it to a player at the same age. And this year, the Zips projections were for Cliff Lee, who was a late bloomer as well. Mm-hmm. And so if Danny Duffy can be any part of what Cliff Lee was in his prime, poor, this contract is a straight up steal. Even if he's just very good, even pretty good, it's pretty good contract. So, I'm thrilled from the fan perspective. I'm thrilled from the analysis perspective. It's a great deal for both sides. It's a great deal for the fans who are mostly, almost universally happy that Duffy's going to be sticking around. So I'm really thrilled. I imagine you're probably in a similar territory as I am.
Yes, absolutely. And just as you mentioned, we've had Duffy on the show, talked to him, not in person, but, in the context of the podcast, as close as we can get. He's just a great
digitally,
guy.
Digitally, we've talked to
digitally,
him.
Yes. Couldn't be happier for a guy like Danny Duffy. Just such a, such a great and genuine guy. He kind of has that, he's not as boisterous as a Rex Hudler, but still has that same feel where, you know, I should think everything Rex Hudler thinks or says is stupid, but I don't. I love it because he's so genuine and he's so just enthusiastic about everything. And, it's just awesome. You can't help but it's kind of it's such an infectious attitude, just kind of take hold on you. And so Danny Duffy is a very similar way, again, not as boisterous, but just the kind of guy where, maybe sometimes some of the things he says does sound cliche, but it doesn't come off as cliche because it really feels genuine. He seems like a really genuine person. I mean, he calls in to 610. He called in on Danny Parkins when Parkins was he recently left 610, and so Parkins had a big man crush on Duffy, and Duffy called in, and they kind of talked and everything. So he's just a really great guy and deserving of this, not only because he's a great guy, but because his play backed it up on the field. And you mentioned the Cliff Lee comparison, and I was just kind of thinking about, okay, who are some guys that I can think of that in the first 5 years were kind of middling and then really exploded? And I was like, okay, what about Max Scherzer? So I went and I looked at him, and Max Scherzer, his first 617 innings pitched, right, he had a 3.92 ERA, 109 ERA plus, a strikeout to walk ratio of 2.85, right? Duffy pretty solid. Duffy's 6 years since he's been with the Royals, 623 innings pitched, 3.71 ERA, 2.34 strikeout to walk ratio. So, pretty close. Better in some areas, not quite as good in others as Scherzer. And then, of course, after those first 6 years, since then Max Scherzer has had 3.09 ERA, 4.77 strikeout to walk ratio, and if you were to narrow it down even further and go into the last 3 or 4 years, he's got a Cy Young Award and many All Star appearances, 2 Cy Young Awards, multiple All Star appearances. I mean, he's not to say that Danny Duffy is going to be like him, but just to say that some of there were when Duffy first came up, I think there were some kind of like, is he ever going to put it all together? And last year was the first year that it really seemed like he did, but he started out in the bullpen. He did have a part of the season where he kind of dipped after he had that really hot stretch. So I think I haven't heard anything negative of anyone saying about this, but I think there's always been that kind of, I really want to see Duffy put it together for an extended period of time. And honestly, if you really look at what he did, 2014 was such a great season. And then 2015, he had his ups and downs, but he also battled injuries. And then, 2016 obviously had a very, very good year. So I think it's great. It's very good for the Royals. He feels like a very Royals kind of a guy, not just for, you know, like Hosmer feels like a Royals kind of guy for this particular window, this particular team right now as it's constructed. Duffy feels like an all-time Royals kind of guy. Like he would be, like he would have fit in on those 70s teams. He fits in now, and he would have fit in on future teams, you know. Can't necessarily say that for every player. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just kind of an observation. Just to, he seems like a very Kansas City guy, a very, very Royals type of guy. So just fantastic to see that. And you saw the improvements he made last year and everything that he's, and he's still, I mean, he's only 27. Well, let's see, when does he turn 28? He
should be 28 this year.
He turned 28. He was 27 last season. He just turned 28 last month.
Yeah.
So yeah, he'll be 28 by the end of this contract. He'll be 33. You know, still James Shields was 33 when he left the Royals. Already signed $75 million contract with the Padres. Is that right? Know. So, I mean, he could
– significant.
Yeah. And by then, you know, inflation
– Right, by then.
For pitchers in baseball will go up exponentially. So if Danny Duffy can put together, you know, five solid seasons, there's no reason he couldn't make another $65 million, probably more, for a few years – for another contract after this. So it's very, very great to see. And good for the Royals, you know, because – if you were the Royals, you wouldn't sign – you wouldn't enter into an agreement like this, committing this much money, if you did not feel that not only was Duffy worth it, but that you'd be able to get that type of value out of him for 5 years. Not saying that they – you know, that it's a guarantee that they will, but they feel that they can. So, you know, similar to an Ian Kennedy deal or, you know, when they signed Jason Vargas – this organization does not extend those types of offers to people unless they feel they're going to get that value for that amount of time. So, you know, we all saw it last year, the improvement stuff he made, but then there's obviously things going on behind the scenes where they say, okay, they can look at someone like Dave Island and say, this is legit. You know, he's obviously proved it. And I can assure you it's something that's repeatable, and he's not only going to repeat it, but he's going to get better. And that's the scary thing. Not scary. I mean, scary for the rest of the league.
Scary for everybody
else. But
not
for the Royals, is that Danny Duffy absolutely can get better. Even if he was what he was last year, which is 180 innings pitched. You know, you'd like that number to tick up a little bit. But, you know, 180 innings pitched, 179.2 technically. But we'll call it 180. With a 3.51 ERA, 1.14 whip, 4.48 strikeout-to-walk ratio. I mean, if he's that guy for the next 5 years, 100% worth the money. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you take that every single time. You know, you'd want, again, you'd want the innings to tick up a little bit. If you can get 20 more innings out of them of the same production, then that's the best contract in baseball right there, essentially. Because by the time you're at the end of that contract, that last year, if you're still getting that kind of production out of Danny Duffy, and you're paying him 13. I'm not sure. I haven't looked at the structure of the contract, but
last year would be $15.5 million.
Okay, so not that high above the average annual value.
I mean, it's $15.5 million.
It'll probably be $20 million will be the going rate for a number three or better starting pitcher.
Probably.
So, I mean, just, we're already making. You know, aces are already making $30 million, like David Price and Zach Greinke and Clayton Kershaw. So I mean,
yeah,
if you're a $30 million ace, then a solid number three making $20 million seems
and
like
left-handed, so
yep,
there may be a premium on the market on that.
Yeah, so I mean, there's, you can always find like a drawback. I feel, you know, at least we try to as you know, semi quasi analysts on
try
the show.
To be fair,
yeah, but
and not cheerlead.
Yeah, but it's hard in this deal to try and look and say, well, there's also this. I mean, you can look maybe at some of his injury history having Tommy John, and you can look at maybe, you know, that he hasn't thrown more. Last year was his career high in innings. But, I mean, those are kind of nitpicky things, and the rest that's all there is good, and all the signs are pointing in the right direction. So, I mean, it's – I don't know if you could ask for much more this offseason, at least in terms of Danny Duffy for the Royals.
Yeah, I think if you think about risk, I mean, obviously there's some hint that, okay, maybe there's a regression just because his walks were so vastly improved from where they were and his strikeouts were so much greater. Maybe those both come back down to earth a little bit. But at the same time, you know, anytime there's any sharp improvement in any way, I always try to find what was the change, what was the difference. And last year it was reported and noted plenty of times that Duffy stopped going from the windup. And that's something that he took from the bullpen, where he had basically gotten comfortable in the windup, simplified everything, or gotten comfortable in the stretch, simplified everything. And, you know, you saw it last year where, you know, every time out he looked completely different, but his stuff wasn't dramatically different. It was just that it helped him execute that extra little bit that he needed. He's already got, you know, a good changeup, and his changeup was really strong last year. Fastball in the mid-90s that can hit 97, 98. Pretty good, slider now that he's kind of morphed his curveball into a slider. And, you know, the best example of that is that 16-strikeout game against Tampa where he just mowed them down. And it was just... it was one of the most fun pitching performances I've ever seen from a Royal. That's like in 20 plus years of watching Royals. Granted, a lot of those were really bad years, but
you got to see Zach Greinke.
I got to see Greinke. I got to see Apier. I got to see Cone. You know, it was up there. And I think by game score, it probably was the best in the franchise history. So. You know, like 35 swings and misses in that game.
God.
Absurd. Just crazy. And I think that was the high for the season, but he tied Clayton Kershaw, who had thrown 20 more pitches in the start where he achieved that. So just a crazy percentage of swings and misses. And, you know, if those small adjustments are enough to get him to where he gets his control in order, that's awesome. Because we've seen it before where he gets the two strikes and he'll nibble a little bit, and he'll kind of be all around the zone, and he maybe loses a guy, or he doesn't put him away, and they foul the ball off. Wasn't the case last year, and it wasn't the case for pretty much the majority of the year. There were maybe little blips at the end in September where he started to give up some more hits and everything, and he gave up a homer, I think, in every start in September. But it was also a career high in innings, so you can kind of see where that would come from. So, I mean, there's risk. I think I tried to start talking about risk whenever ago. You know, obviously he's had Tommy John surgery. So that looms somewhere. Perhaps that'll wear down in the, you know, down the line. Who knows? Maybe it won't. It's not guaranteed that it will. You know, again, he's just reached his career high, and it's only 179.2 innings. So can he give you 200 innings? Maybe, probably. You know, if he makes 32 starts and can do between 6 and 7 innings, he's right in that range. And, you know, as we've seen over last year, that ability to kind of put guys away and avoid the long at-bats and avoid the walks and you know, turn those into outs, that's going to benefit him because, you know, if that saves 15 pitches in the first 5 innings, well, that's another inning he can handle. And so that's one of the big things that kind of happened last year that really benefited him. So I think there's, you know, anytime you have a pitcher, there's always injury risk. So maybe that's something to worry about, but I think it's a worthy gamble just because, I mean, when you're talking about even like millions of dollars per war, per win above replacement, he could probably miss a season and still make the value of the contract. I mean, it's that friendly of a contract, and he has that much upside to kind of sustain the success through the rest of his deal and his time with the Royals and perhaps even after that. You know, it might be something that at 33 years old, he continues to want to stay with the Royals and wants to pull an Alex Gordon. I mean, you know, he's been unabashedly pro KC.
Bury me a Royal.
Bury me a Royal. Just awesome. I mean, cool. He's ride or die with this city. And I think that's why people are so happy. I mean, it has to be.
Yeah. And, you know, it was, to talking about your, you mentioned the pitch selection and changes that he made, and it's kind of interesting if you go back and you look at the Fangraphs data for his pitch selection. So in 2014, which was his first full year back after Tommy John, he threw 68% fastball, 22.5% curveball, and then 9.4% changeup. And then you mentioned he kind of merged the curveball into a slider. So then looking at Fangraphs, starting in 2015, his curveball basically went away.
It just disappears.
It just disappears. And then all of a sudden, so he went from 22.5% curveball, throwing curveball 22.5% of the time, and then it goes to 23.5% slider and 0.7% curveball, 10% changeup. And then his slider percentage stays, oddly enough, exactly the same in 2016 at 23.5%. Curveball, again, non-existent. And the changeup goes up to 17%, and he decreases how much he used on the fastball. The interesting thing, though, the fastball, according to Fangraphs data, again, his velocity was the highest it's ever been last year. So normally he's in – oh, I'm sorry. I misread that one. So except for 2012. But every other year he was sitting 93-ish. In 2012 it was 95. That was the year he had Tommy John.
Yep.
In 2016 he had a 94.8 average velocity on his fastball. Pretty good for a starter.
Yeah.
But his changeup in terms of average velocity was exactly, again, oddly enough, exactly the same. Like, that's just so fascinating to me. He averaged in throwing a changeup 10% of the time in 2015, 85.2 miles per hour, and averaged again 85.2 miles per hour in 2016. How many ball changeups do you think he threw to have the exact same average velocity? You know, that's crazy. That's an amazing consistency to be able to do that. And, you know, it's probably more of a freakish coincidence than it is consistency, but just to be that close. But regardless, the point of bringing all that up is with the ticking up in the velocity of the fastball, an entire mile per hour over 2015 in terms of average velocity, you know, even just a little bit like that can make your changeup that much more effective, especially if you're staying where if your changeup velocity isn't changing. So not only is the difference between the fastball and the changeup greater, which is a disadvantage to the hitter.
Yeah.
And he's throwing the changeup more often now. So, you know, all these mixes have shown, you can kind of see, even just looking at something as simple as what pitches he's throwing and at what rate he's throwing them, you can kind of see that evolution of Danny Duffy because, you know, going back to his rookie year in 2011, he was throwing a fastball, slider, a curveball, and a changeup. And so now he's more focused. And seems like he has a better plan, and his pitches are better, it seems, so they can be more effective. Now, to the idea of going from the stretch, I think that's interesting because I try to equate it to golf. Do you golf, Mike?
I last golfed in the 90s.
Okay.
So no.
We'll go with no. We'll call that a no.
Yeah.
So when you golf, you know, there's a million moving parts to a swing, just similar to a baseball swing and to a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm out golfing and I'm like, okay, I got to keep my wrists firm and I got to turn this way and I got to make sure the club's at this angle and then I got to keep my knees bent and my back straight and all this stuff, I'll usually end up just, you know, duffing the ball into the weeds or giving a huge slice or something. But if I only concentrate on one thing, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to worry about making sure I keep my wrists firm on this swing. That's usually when I do the best. And then, you know, after a while, I think, okay, I'm comfortable. My muscle memory is that I'm going to keep my wrists firm. So now I need to worry about making sure I keep my knees bent properly, you know? So when I try and strip everything away and focus on just the one aspect, therefore simplifying the whole process mentally, I find I do better. So obviously I'm not a Major League Baseball pitcher, but I feel like there's an element of that in what Duffy did where, you know, windup adds a few more moving parts to this gigantic mechanism, where as Cliff Lee put it, you know, a train wreck every time you throw a baseball. So if you can strip away certain pieces of that, maintain your effectiveness, but just make it simpler for you to make it easier to maintain that effectiveness, then it's going to lead to more success. And it seems like that's what Danny Duffy did. And I think a lot of that leads into the Minda Haas thing we talked about earlier. I'm not sure if people are familiar with her on Twitter, but she's a photographer. She takes pictures, Omaha Storm Chasers, Lada. She's got tons of great pictures online, lots of Wilds pictures, just tons. We, you know, back when Mike and I were at Kings of Kauffman, we would use some of her pictures occasionally. She was graceful enough to allow us to use those with, you know, as long as we cited where they came from. And you know, so she puts a lot of stuff out there. And so she gets to know some of, you know, as a photographer, she will occasionally talk to some of these people and see them interact with fans and such. And it's always a little bit different at the minor leagues because, it's you know, there's so much less press and there's less stuff going on. And she had, excuse me, she had a story where there was, you know, all these little leaguers that were running out to the, for the, to the national anthem on at a on a game for an Omaha's Werner, what's the name of the stadium?
Yeah, Werner Park.
Werner Park. Okay, yeah. So supposed to run out for the national anthem, and I guess one kid like left behind and got looked really scared and kind of curled up, and Danny Duffy went over to him, and she had pictures of this whole thing going on that she posted online, and I'd definitely go check it out, give her a follow, and look at what she posted. But you know, essentially, you know, he went over and, you know, kind of talked this kid and kind of talked him down from his fear and helped him get over it and get onto to the field. And, you know, he was asked why, you know, he did that or what he did and everything. And he was like, well, you know, that was me, that little kid. And that's, you know, going back to what you talked about with, you know, 2010, when he stepped away from baseball, he's had, you know, some issues, whether it be with things. I'm not exactly sure what all, you know, he had, if it was anxiety. I know Grinke's was anxiety when he left. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if Duffy's was the same, but whatever it was that he had, you know, and I think it shows a very high level of maturity and, you know, self-awareness, which I think is very important to be able to say, okay, you know, here's the problems that I had. Here's how I got over it. I can recognize that in other people, especially younger kids. And I can help them, you know. That's just like when you see that, and you can see why the Royals would love him so much, especially because they probably knew about that story well before, you know, yeah, any of us would have heard about it. So that's just incredibly impressive when you hear a story like that. And it just kind of sums up Danny Duffy on how, just from all standpoints, it seems, you know, he's just a really impressive individual. So it's been great to see him evolve as a pitcher and as a person, because, you know, he was a little bit, I think you could, even though he had kind of gotten past whatever it was that caused him to step away a little bit, you know, when he was a rookie and stuff, he was different when he would be interviews and different things, and he would get, you know, on the mound, and, you know, he'd get really kind of keyed up, and sometimes,
mm-hmm, yeah,
you kind of hear him getting kind of, I don't want to say agitated, but just kind of jacked up. And then he was very, you know, ups and downs emotionally. And there's definitely been a maturing, and you could see it last year. You know, when he was on the mound, he looked different. He looked calmer. He looked more in control. And you can hear it in the interviews he does with the press and the radio and everything, that he has, you know, he's really kind of taken that step. The light's turned on. Whatever you want to say, it's happened to Danny Duffy, and he's been rewarded with a contract. And you can, you know, it's not, again, not just because he's, you know, really great guy and because he's matured as a person, but also as a baseball player. So it's going to be a ton of fun to see him the next 5 years as he hopefully, you know, ushers in a new era for the Royals after, you know, as he'll be kind of one of the few remaining pieces after next year, when we anticipate a lot of a big mass exodus from a lot of these players that are free agents. So
yeah,
hopefully he can kind of finish this era, if you will, and then be the help of starting a new one.
Be the bridge, in a way.
Exactly.
It's an interesting kind of approach for this offseason, because the Royals, you know, obviously they trade Wade Davis, they get Jorge Soler, they trade 1 year for 4 years, then they trade Jerod Dyson for Nate Karns, 1 year for 4 years, and now they sign Duffy. I mean, really, right now they're sitting on, you know, if Ian Kennedy doesn't opt out and he's still pitching well, They'll go into 2018, 2019, even 2020, and they'll have these three guys, Duffy, Yordano Ventura, and Ian Kennedy, all set up to be in their starting rotation. And so that, and Nathan Carnes even, you know, if he's pitching well and you know, is tender to contract and everything, they might have their rotation for the next few years right now, which enables them to focus entirely. You know, they've got the payroll banked. They can focus on literally every other position, and maybe just building depth and developing these guys. So, I mean, we might get really, really sick and tired of talking about Duffy, Ventura, Kennedy, and Carnes over the next few years, or we might not. I mean, Carnes has some upside, as we've talked about. Ventura, the talent you can tell is there. It's just he's got to make the same kind of leap that Duffy did for consistency. Kennedy's, you know, if Kennedy ends up being your 3 or 4 starter for the next couple of years, you're not in a bad position.
Yeah,
so
if those four are still starting for the Royals in 2019, then they're going to be in good shape.
Yeah. Now, I wouldn't be mad if some starting pitchers developed and pushed those guys out and trade them off, but at least right now, you know, you've got that group of guys and they all should be at least able to be pretty average. And, you know, if you've got four average starting pitchers and maybe a little bit of upside, you can kind of do some damage. I want to go back to just the talk about like pitch selection and stuff, because, you know, I think when you're talking about the simplification, I think that's also trusting what he can do, trusting his stuff, trusting his delivery, and really focusing on the execution of everything and not worrying about everything else. And we've seen it, like you said, he gets keyed up. He's been someone who gets way hyped up for things. Like if it's his first start of the season out of the bullpen, or he comes back to Kauffman or something, you know, you can kind of see him overthrowing, trying to do too much. That really wasn't a thing last year. And I don't know if that's just the adjustment made him more comfortable and the stretch makes him more comfortable and more in control of things, or it's just simply that he matured and he's got a much more consistent mindset and maybe a little more of that surfer zen thing going on. You know, I don't know, but I think it's telling that you see his fastball jump up last year where he went completely out as a stretch, where typically the idea for decades and decades is that the windup produces more velocity. And Duffy shows, you know, as you know, many others have, that that's not the case. And so on average, if he's throwing harder and he's in more control of what his delivery is, you know, that's where you get that opportunity to really develop everything else. And, you know, last year could just be a sign of things to come and not necessarily a peak or an outlier or anything like that. And if he's a late bloomer in this way, and we've kind of been waiting, you know, he's been in the organization for almost 10 years now. You know, he's, if he ends up being a late bloomer, gosh, I mean, for the money especially, that's going to be a huge thing for the Royals as they try to keep the window open. That's another big thing. I mean, he's sticking around in a time where he knows that Mike Moustakas is probably going to be going somewhere else. Eric Hosmer is going to be going somewhere else. Lorenzo Cain's going to be going somewhere else, probably. Gerard Dyson's already been traded off. You know, Wade Davis is already gone. Luke Hochaver became, you know, is a free agent right now. So a lot of those guys, and like you said, the group that we got familiar with for the 2015 World Series, you know, they're going to start departing. But Duffy's going to stick around, and he's not sticking around necessarily saying, you know, he could just as easily go, everybody else is taking off, I'm going to go take off too. You know, and after this year, he probably could have been a pretty hot commodity. You know, I saw some people saying he might be like the third best pitcher in the starting pitcher market. You know, that's going to, you know, he's probably leaving some money on the table to stay in Kansas City. And if that's a comfort level thing, that's probably to his benefit. Or if it's just that he really does believe that, you know, there's still a lot of contending life in this team, you know, and he wants to lead it, well, then that's pretty special. And that can really endear him to Kansas City just overall, And another note as we continue to talk about Danny Duffy, Sam Mallinger wrote a bit about Duffy, and he brought up this fun exercise. If you duplicate his 2016 for every year of the contract, you know, the next 5 years of it, Duffy would end up seventh all-time in innings, sixth all-time in strikeouts, ahead of Zach Greinke even, seventh in wins and fourth in wins above replacement. He would be behind only Kevin Apier, Brett Saberhagen, and Mark Gubazaw in Royals history. I mean, wow. That's significant. I mean, those are some marquee kind of guys. You know, those are names that people 10 years older than me, 15 years older than me will still talk about. And Duffy can really hit that kind of territory. And really, he's only had 1 year where he's been a consistently strong starter throughout.
That's only if he does what he did last year.
Yeah, if he gets even better, then my goodness. And even if he fades a little bit, I mean, he can still probably finish top 10 in most of those categories simply on the basis of being average and being pretty good, you know, pretty good starting pitcher. And even if he gets moved to the bullpen, you know, he can be a lights out reliever too. And we've seen that over the course of his career. So, you know, there are risks. Can he repeat it? Will he get hurt again? But man, there's just a lot of upside to it. And not just on the field. I mean, it feels good to keep a guy around. It feels good to keep, especially this guy around. So, you know, overall I am thrilled.
And you talk about upside, you know, it's right now, you know, most likely, and I think this is when the Royals feel comfortable signing a deal like this, they know they'll get something out of Danny Duffy. Maybe mm-hmm. it won't be what they planned or what they necessarily wanted, but for the next 5 years, is it outlandish to say with 90% certainty that Duffy will be a starting pitcher that is, you know, a major league caliber starting pitcher, which is a very wide range, but, you know, to say that with 90% certainty for those 5 years, completely reasonable. So if you're like, okay, if we've got a major league pitcher for 5 years, and that's the worst that comes out of that contract, worst case scenario, then, you know, we can live with that. Well, you know, we took a chance and it didn't turn out as what we got, but we got some value. It's okay. But the flip side of that is he becomes a top five, you know, top 10 pitcher in the league, top five, maybe. He's got that kind of ceiling. You know, many scouts and different analysts have said, you know, if he can put it all together for an extended period of time, you know, we've seen it. He's got that ability to be a legit ace in this league. So then you're looking at, okay, you know, say he, you know, 2 years from now, he's a legitimate ace, and you're paying him $13 million, and David Price is getting $31 million, mm-hmm. and you're roughly the same. You know, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be David Price, but that's the possibility there. So your range is, okay, we're going to get worst case scenario, you get Bruce Chen for the next 5 years, right? You know,
maybe good Bruce Chen.
Yeah, like 2009 to 2011 Bruce Chen, right? That was just a major league, he's a major league pitcher, you know, a body innings eater type of guy, or maybe Jason Vargas for the next 5 years,
yeah.
or something, you know, that's, yeah. You can live with that. That's absolutely okay. It feels like a bit of an overpay maybe at that point, but you know, you're like, okay, we can chalk it up to, you know, we paid a premium at the time, didn't work out, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you also knew with Bruce Chen and Jason Vargas, their ceiling had been reached.
Yeah.
You know,
Jason
Vargas. Yeah. He's the guy that you compare other people to for being average, you know, I mean,
right.
there's he's not breaking through any more ceilings, but Duffy has quite a few more that he could break through. So that's, you know, it's not quite a lottery ticket because there's some certainty as to what you're going to get. I feel like when you're talking about Duffy, but there is that, you know, that definite, kind of bet on me type of a possibility here where, you know, I mean, if Danny Duffy's a 30-year-old pitcher who's striking out 200 plus a year with a sub-3 ERA, yeah. and pitching 200 innings, and you're paying him $13 million per year, I mean, it's going to be different because of the structure of the contract, but average value, $13 million, I mean, That's absurd. Just to that the Royals would be it'd be, you know, essentially, it'd be like 2 years ago when they were paying Sal Perez $1.5 million to be the best, one of the best catchers in baseball. You know, I mean, it's probably won't be quite that bad, but in the same sense, it'll just be like the Royals made a really savvy deal. They bet on the right player and it worked out for him. You know, so it's happened in the past for the Royals, and you know, and the Royals did that with Sal Perez, saying, okay, worst case scenario, we know with Sal Perez, we've got an incredibly good defensive catcher who is going to be able to run into probably 15 home runs a year, even if it turns out that he only hits 220. Now, since then, you know, he's had his ups and downs, but he's been even better than that offensively, and defensively he's been exactly that. So they knew, you know, what their kind of baseline they were hoping for. So I think you've got the same situation with Duffy. You know your baseline. You know what, you know, worst case scenario you can still live with, and best case scenario, you're going to have one of the best contracts in all of baseball.
One more thing that I'll mention about Duffy, and then we'll see where we're at. This is probably my favorite Duffy thing, and I'm kind of disappointed in one of the players I'm going to name because they kind of ruined the fun part of it. So Danny Duffy, you know, obviously he's been strong as a left-handed pitcher. You know, last year he gave up a home run to Rougned Odor, who was batting left-handed. And that was the first regular season home run he'd allowed to a left-handed hitter since 2011. So, wow. Granted, he didn't pitch completely in 2012 and 2013, but still, since 2011, and it was August 27th, 2011, Jim Thome hit a home run off of Danny Duffy from the left-hand side of the plate. And until Rougned Odor in July last year, Duffy had not given up a single home run to a left-handed hitter. Like, Thome retired in 2012. So, I mean, that he almost, if he could have gotten Odor, he almost could have gotten through this season, and Thome could end up on a Hall of Fame ballot.
Wow.
Is the last guy to homer off Duffy.
That's incredible.
So, damn you, Rougned Odor, for doing that. Now, I will add the caveat that Michael Conforto in the 2015 World Series in Game 4 did hit a home run off of Duffy. So
we're only talking regular season.
I'm only talking regular season.
It's completely irrelevant right now for this discussion. For the purposes of this discussion, it's completely irrelevant.
Right. So, I mean, and that's just crazy. He's given up 5 regular season homers to lefties.
That's nuts. That is nuts. He's given up 71 home runs in his career.
Yeah.
So 5 of 71 to left-handers, and that's it. That's nuts.
Pretty crazy. Is pretty dominant against that handed side. And, you know, so we'll see how that continues throughout the rest of his career and the rest of his contract. But if nothing else, he can probably be a left-handed specialist. So, yeah. I mean, I guess that's your rock bottom floor.
Yeah, that's the absolute 100% worst.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to be the case. I think you're going to see a pretty good pitcher for the next 5 years in Danny Duffy, and he could be fantastic. You know, he could be very good. So, well done, Royals. Everybody seems to like it. And not only that, this contract, the way they've structured it, he's going to make $65 million over the course of it, but 15.5 will be in the last year, 15.25 in 2019 and 2020. Next season, I'll say next season as 2018, because you were about to hit pitchers and catchers, he'll make $14 million. But in 2017, they're only going to pay him $5 million, which is about $3 million off of his projected arbitration figure for 2017. So the Royals...
That's $3 million lower, by the way.
Right.
$3 million off.
So the Royals, they trade away Davis, $10 million. They got Jorge Soler, less than $4 million for him. They traded Jerod Dyson, who settled at $2.8 million with the Mariners. They got Nate Karns, who's going to make the league minimum, and probably a little bit touch higher than the league minimum, because it's going to be his last year before arbitration, and they usually will make around... He'll probably make about $600,000 or so. And then this, where they save $3 million. So, you know, we've all figured it up. It's around $12 million that they're going to save just from these three moves. And you've got a starting pitcher, you've got your potential, you're probably opening day starter, and you've got an outfielder with a lot of promise, which gives them an opportunity to add to the team. So there are definitely guys who are still out there. We're starting to get into that period where the market is a little weird, because guys who probably should be getting better contracts aren't, because a lot of teams have signed guys. A lot of teams have hit where they want to budget themselves. Gregor Blanco, who should probably be on a big league roster automatically, signed a minor league contract with the Diamondbacks. I mean, he should probably be making $2 million at least somewhere to be a fourth outfielder, and he's gonna, you know, go in with the minor league deal. So you're running into these kind of spots where the music's about to stop, and guys are gonna be trying to get jobs. Trevor Cahill got like $1.75 million. I mean, he could probably be a guy who can start 15 times for you and pitch pretty well out of the bullpen if you need him to, you know, give you 80 good innings in a season, and he's going to be making hardly anything. And so that's where it's starting to lay up for the Royals. And so $12 million could be a pretty nice opportunity for them to add some guys. So, you know, I know you brought up, Jeff, a lot of the guys that we've talked about in the past, the relievers, you know, your guy, Sergio Romo, mm-hmm. is still out there. My guy, Joe Smith, is still out there. Greg Holland is still out there.
Greg Holland. And, speaking of which, Greg Holland, it's a little bit of news came out about, and I don't know if I'd call it news, but speculation, was it John Heyman?
Jim Bowden.
Or was it Jim Bowden? Jim Bowden. Speculating that from his sources, that Greg Holland, within the next 7 days, was going to be deciding the next team that he will be on. So you can read that into saying next team as in it won't be the Royals, or next team as in that's just something you say, and he could still be signing with the Royals.
Yep.
But he's still out there regardless.
Yeah, and we know that the Royals have some interest. You know, who knows? I would imagine Holland probably feels pretty comfortable with Kansas City. Mm-hmm. I would figure there's a decent chance he would like, if it, I would say the Royals would probably be a top three or four, but maybe not number one. But it all comes down to contract and opportunity. And if he just wants to go somewhere where he knows he's going to be comfortable, well, he probably goes to Kansas City. If he goes somewhere where he knows he can close, well, that might be Washington. And I think Bryce Harper was trying to rally the front office of the Nationals to sign Holland. So we'll see how that goes, but
how are you going to say no to Bryce Harper? You know,
it's difficult. That's tough. There are bats out there. Like Mike Napoli's still out there. Pedro Alvarez is still out there. Chris Carter's still out there. You know, there's just plenty of guys out there that could probably help this team out. And so the Royals have made these moves and giving them some wiggle room, you know, I think it. I mean, I know you brought up this point in our list, and I kind of hijacked it, so I'll let you expand in a second. But I mean, they really ought to reinvest some of that, if not all of it, into filling out the bullpen. You know, not just spending it to spend it, but find the guys that you really want and make sure you get them. And you know, you should probably be able to get some bargains out there, the way things are shaping up and the way that other rosters are filling out. So $12 million plus, you know, the upside of the guys and extending the window with the players that they've achieved. Interesting off season. But you know, hopefully not done, right?
Let's hope, you know, and it's, I would be shocked if they didn't do anything, you know, because we talked about it before with the Wade Davis trade, and you know, now with $12 million that you're saving, you're getting a little bit more traction in terms of how much overall money you're saving, but that's still not, even now with the lower payroll, $12 million is still not even 10% of the total payroll. You know, it's about mm-hmm. $129 million now as it currently stands with some arbitration estimates, you know, but so Danny Duffy signing him to this contract and then moving it from the estimated, was it 8.5-ish million, 8.8 it was around or something. 8.
I think they ended up exchanging figures at like 7.2 and 8 million.
Okay.
Like the Royals off, like the Royals figure was 7.2 and Duffy's camp submitted 8 million, and that's what would have gone to hearing, but you know, that's close enough. Even if they hadn't, you know, that's close enough, they would have met in the middle anyway, but
right.
You know, then obviously you signed this contract with an extension and everything. But yeah, I mean, it would have ended up 8 million would have been the max, that they would have owed him for this year. So,
and to your point that you made when we're talking about the Wade Davis trade, you know, if you're trying to save money going from a possibility of $8 million max down to $5 million, you're not doing a very good job. Now, of course, if you put that in the context of now $12 million overall, so it's look a little bit better, but that's still not a ton of money. I mean, you got to remember, David, you know, it's in real people money, like talking about the contract and real people money to us, it's a lot, but in baseball world, not a ton. And to David Glass, it's even less. You know, he thinks in billions, not millions. You know, we've talked about this before. So it would be hard for me to believe that they would essentially penny pinch in these areas just to save $12 million, you know, but it would make a lot more sense if that was just to move some things around so that they can go out and sign, you know, one, maybe two more players, or two, maybe three more players. You know, I don't know how much a Greg Holland would cost, but somewhere between probably $2 and $3 million and an incentive laden deal, that would really, probably be enough to get him again. I think with Greg Holland, the Royals have the money and everything in place to get him back. I think it's just a matter of, like you said, does he want to come back with the Royals and be, you know, a setup man or maybe even a seventh inning man? And as he watches Herrera be the closer, who used to be his seventh inning guy, you know, does he want to do that? Is the comfort level with the Royals and, you know, he knows all the people in the bullpen. It's kind of changed a little bit since he was last on the team, but, you know, he still knows a lot of them, knows the coaches, all that kind of stuff. So how much does all of those factors, both the good and the bad parts of it, how much does that factor into his decision when, you know, he said, like you said, Bryce Harper's out there tweeting, you know, that he to get Greg Holland on the Nationals, then he would be a closer in that team. You know, and the Nationals figure to be as competitive, if not more competitive, than the Royals next year. You know, I mean, so you've got that's a tough decision to weigh for him. And I think he would probably get – I don't really think that anybody's going to go into a bidding war for Greg Holland. You know, it's like, you know, we'll give you $2 million. Well, this team's offering me three. Like, well,
no one's going to jump over that.
We'll also give you three, you know, but then like, okay, well, now they're going to give me 3.5. It's like, all right, you should take the 3.5, you know?
Right.
Like, that's kind of how that negotiation would go. So, but, you know, I think you can – point is he can be relatively cheap, and then you've still got, you know, say it takes $3 million, right, to sign Greg Holland. This is being pretty conservative. Because I don't know that it would take that much if you have a lot of incentives, but so you still got $9 million. So then, what do you go? What do? You go out and, you know, Luke Hochaver's still out there. We haven't heard anything about him. You know, no. He had the thoracic outlet surgery, so it's such a new surgery. I think people might be hesitant with that kind of stuff because we still don't know how people, what the recovery process is like, what it takes, how long it takes. You know, I mean, we know what we know. But it's just a familiarity level. You know, people have been getting Tommy John surgeries for 20 years, 25 years. It's been very prominent. Now everyone's familiar with it. They know what the process is like. They know what to expect. And even though thoracic outlet in terms of a recovery process isn't as major as Tommy John, there's not as much familiarity with it. So I don't wonder if that plays into a little bit of hesitancy on the part of other major league teams. Someone like Chris Young, you know, he had to fully come back and play before people then started showing any interest in him, you know, which was the Royals, and pulled him back. And even then, the interest was slight.
Yeah, he signed now, Chris, around spring training.
Yeah, and now Chris Young is a bit of a different pitcher than Greg Holland.
Sure.
But, you know, at the same time, it's just an example of what, you know, how that unfamiliarity might have a little bit of might cause teams to just be a little bit slower in how they react to it. But still, you know, Hochaver's out there, and you talked about, you know, Sergio Romo, and, you know, players we've talked about in the past, like, you know, Pedro Alvarez, I mean, Mike Napoli is still out there. Chris Carter is even still out there. And, you know, and you mentioned Trevor Cahill taking less time. I mean, he was, you know, he was on the World Series Cubs last year, and he's still taking less money. So it's, you know, it's, there's a lot they can do. Not only would I be shocked, that's maybe too strong a word, surprised if they didn't do anything, but I'd be a little disappointed if they didn't do anything, because it's, you know, there's every opportunity that they have to go out, and the Royals have a good core team. You know, we've talked about this the last couple of years. Their core roster is set and it's good. So, you know, last year we saw, if you slip a little bit around the margins, then, you know, things can go haywire and they can snowball. And the Royals had a couple big losing streaks, you know, because they didn't have the depth they had in 2015, and it kind of derailed the season. You know, if a couple of things would have gone differently, you know, in the early season, they started off 12-6 last year. Everyone thought it was going to be business as usual.
Yeah.
And they went 3-11, you know, so if they switch those things around and a little bit, instead of going 3-11, they go 6-8, you know, then they're above 500 still, instead of being 15-17 at one point. They're probably only a few games back of the White Sox. You know, the whole season looks a lot different. You know, maybe what was a really bad month? Was it July? I can't remember.
July was the bad month.
Yeah. Where they were like 7-19 or whatever. I mean, if you, you know, win three or four more games at that point and they're in first place, you know, for a lot of August probably. And so it's like, you know, unfortunately, things didn't work out like that. But it just shows, you know, how small that error, that margin for error was. So even though $12 million might not seem like a lot, and it might not be super exciting to go signing, you know, Sergio Romo or Chris Carter or something like that, you know, any little bit that can improve your depth and just improve those 25 men overall, because the Royals, maybe more so than any other team, really utilize all 25 men on the roster at any given point in time. So if you improve 1-25, then you're improving the team. And if just a couple things, if that little bit of improvement means that just a couple things bounce your way, a couple things go differently, then, you know, maybe 27 doesn't get derailed like 2016, and it's closer to 2015 and 2014 than it is to 2016. So, you know, it doesn't seem like a ton, doesn't seem super, you know, super sexy or exciting to do some of these moves, but they're ones that, you know, when you get down to it, they really could pay off. You know, I mean, especially with losing a guy like Wade Davis, you know, if you go and get a Greg Holland, and even though he's not going to be as good, you know, it's still adding more depth back to that bullpen and getting your bullpen back to, even if it's not where it was with Wade Davis, you're decreasing the gap that is now there between 2016 bullpen and 2017. So, you know, I do think they will make a move, but I really hope they do, because I'll be pretty disappointed if they just sit on this money they've saved.
Yeah, the way I kind of figure it, I don't think that I think the way they've got it set up, the bullpen probably has two spots left that aren't locked down. Like right now at this stage, Herrera, Soria, Matt Strom should be good to go out there. Chris Young will be out there. Brian Flynn, I think, is out of options. And he pitched really well last year. Surprisingly well, actually. Went under the radar. But everybody else after that, they're either like minor leagues, free agent signings like Bobby Parnell and Brandon League that we talked about recently, or like Mike Minor, who I expect zero out of. Or they're guys like Almonte and Zimmer who have been kind of disappointing prospects. So I don't know that there's necessarily anybody that's going to ascend from the current group. I mean, they'll make do if it's something like Brandon League and Mike Minor in the back of the bullpen. They'll make do. But if you can go get Greg Holland for $2.5 million, and you can go get Sergio Romo for $3 million, well, you've added some pretty good firepower to your bullpen. Guys with closing experience. Guys who, you know, if you don't completely trust Soria, they can bridge to Herrera. They can lighten the load on Strom, so Strom doesn't have to throw every single high leverage situation. And, you know, you really kind of maintain the depth and let other guys develop as you would like them maybe in the minor leagues. Like Almonte, you kind of want him to see if he can be a starter. Or if not, you know, give him an opportunity to be a reliever and give him that test in Omaha and then kind of go from there. So I think it does help them to sign some guys. And I think they'll sign probably at least one reliever, which, again, like you said, it's not sexy. It's not exciting. But, you know, depth is important. And we saw that even in, like, last August where the Royals were kind of just bringing in, you know, Luke Hochaver had been hurt, Wade Davis had been hurt, and the Royals are sitting there in high leverage situations, bringing in Scott Alexander. And nothing against Scott Alexander. But when you open that door and you are trying to put out a fire, he's not the guy, he's not your first choice at this stage in his career. Maybe someday, you know, there's nothing that says he can't develop into being that guy. But last year it was kind of like, okay, that's who we have. We're Brooks Pounders. And it's like, okay, you know, if you can go to a more surefire option, I think that's to their benefit. And so, you know, if they feel like they're comfortable everywhere else, I do think that they have some spots in the bullpen that they can fill. And they have a little bit of room to do it. You know, I mean, like you brought up, the money they saved, while yes, it's good, you know, if they're actively trying to save the money, it's not really an aggressive move to save money. So they've kind of, instead of a full blow up and rebuild or a full investment in one last go, they've kind of gone into the middle, and somehow kind of, you know, kind of maintained and saved money.
Yeah, it almost makes you wonder if that wasn't part of the deal with Danny Duffy, is that we say, hey, you know, not only sign this contract, but sign it now and reduce the amount that you would get paid versus arbitration, and we'll use it to sign somebody else. Because otherwise, if you say, hey, we just want to save money this year, so restructure the contract, you know, you might as well just be like, well,
you're going to be paying it later anyway.
Yeah, I'll just take my $8 million this year, and then I still want to sign with you guys, so I'll sign next year, and then you can give me a 4-year contract with the rest of the money you were going to give me anyway. It'll be a 4-year $60 million contract next year, and then I'll make $8 million this year. It'll be more money for me, you know. So I don't know that Danny Duffy would do that, but point being, you know, it does make you wonder if that wasn't some extra incentive, like, hey, you know, sign this contract, take the less money now. You're still guaranteed the whole chunk, so you're going to get it, but it'll help us out because we can do a little bit extra now this year. So who knows, I suppose. I don't know if we ever will. Kinds of dealings don't typically come out in terms of, you know, contract negotiations. But
generally not. But we do have a week between this podcast and the next one, so
very true.
Fingers so crossed.
If Dayton is still a man of his word, then, you know, something, maybe we'll,
he'll do
Royal sign Sergio Romo. Yes. Okay.
All right. Now we're doing something.
Yes. So I think that kind of hits all the major points on Duffy. Just some other small news. The Royals have officially, they announced their Hall of Fame ballot voting.
Their
Hall of Fame voting. So it's, you know, we talked about it previously in a previous episode. So if you'd like to hear
an award-winning episode.
Award-winning episode, correct. In 2016, so go into the archives on this one.
Right.
We've had two shows.
So 3 weeks ago or so.
Yes. But we did discuss it, and we discussed, you know, who would who was eligible to be on the ballot at the time. But not many surprises in terms of who's on there. So, you know, guys like Bo Jackson, Johnny Damon, Kevin Seitzer, Alphys Morris, Al Cowens. So, you know, some good names. It's actually – it's a nice list because it's – you know, it's – there's actually some decisions. You could actually make a few different arguments. Normally it's like, well, we could maybe talk about this guy.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, well – you know, we got it's Joey Gathright, and it's
years ago, Brian
Jason
Bannister was
Grimsley
on the ballot.
Yeah,
Brian Bannister. I like Brian Bannister a lot,
Jimmy,
but man,
Jimmy
he does
on here. Okay.
Oh yeah,
So, you know, where you kind of just say, like, do we have to? Do we have to put somebody in this year? And the answer is no, because there's been years where there's nobody in there.
Even the last guy to go in was Sweeney, and before that was Jeff Montgomery as far as players.
Yeah, sounds right.
I know Art Stewart went in and George Toma went in somewhere in that kind of time frame, but, I mean, obviously they're not players. The Royals are pretty stringent, and I don't remember if I brought it up or not. We do have some audio from years gone by where we talked to Kurt Nelson about the process of doing this and how they set up their voting system and come up with the ballot and everything. So if I remember by the time I'm done editing, I might throw that out as a bonus or maybe on the end of this or something like that. So if you're listening to this and there's like 15 minutes left on your timer on whatever podcast app, and you can find us on Stitcher, iTunes, and any other podcast application that you like, then I would have added that.
There you go.
Or we rambled and started talking about God knows what, like we usually do. You know, like we do.
Or I might
throw that little Kurt Nelson bit out later. When they kind of make whatever announcement, which I think is soon, actually. I think it might be the end of the month they announce if they elected anybody. I'll have to check that. Don't quote me on that. So we'll see.
We will keep you posted.
Yep. I'm out of ideas. I'm out of thoughts.
There it is. That pretty much sums it up for this week. So very exciting. Danny Duffy is going to be a Royal for quite a bit longer. Half a decade.
You can buy the jersey.
You can.
You can't.
I cannot.
You can't. You're cursed.
The collective you can, yes.
Right.
I have never figured out. I guess that's not entirely true. I was going to say, I've never figured out if the curse extends to the Royals or if it's just a Chiefs thing. Because I've never had a legit Royals jersey with a number on it. I've got a couple of the like button-up jerseys that are just the blank ones, you know?
Yeah.
But the reason I stopped myself is because I did remember I bought a Billy Butler jersey.
And I actually,
now that I think about it too, a friend of mine that I worked with at a previous job, he had had an extra of the button-up Billy Button jerseys they gave away that one year.
Oh, yeah.
Like 5 years ago or so, six years ago, whenever it was.
That might have been like 2010-ish.
Yeah.
I want to say.
That's when I was working at that job, so that sounds about right. But I bought one off of him, you know, because Billy Butler was my favorite at the time. So,
sure, and now what's he done?
Now we're here. So I guess that's proof. The proof is in the pudding, if you will. That's all we need.
The jersey curse.
So I will not buy a Danny Duffy jersey. But if you are out there and you're a Danny Duffy fan and you're happy about this, I encourage you to do so.
From whatever source, we don't actually promote one, so
that's true. Yeah,
I just think it's cool that you know, if you like Danny Duffy's.
The only thing I'll say is, once you do buy it, stop by Kelly's and celebrate the buying of this jersey with a nice beer and/or libation of your choice.
Yes, that would be gnar.
That would be gnar, and with that, we can close the show.
Yes, let's for get you. Out of here.
Yes, so. Congratulations, a heartfelt congratulations to friend of the show, Danny Duffy. He's been on a couple times. I think we can call him that. So congratulations to him. Really awesome to see. And congratulations to the Royals. You've got yourself a good player and hopefully what will someday be a very great one for the next 5 years. So we'll be looking forward to that. And Dayton Moore, if you're listening, you know, wink, wink, make another move for us. So we have something to talk about next week. If not, we'll be here anyway. Talking just like we are every
we'll
week
is
one week closer to pitchers and catchers reporting, and then the season begins, and it's 2017, and it's just, there's going to be a new sense of urgency for this season from all the players with all the free agency, and we'll have plenty of time to talk about that. So until next time, thank you so much for listening. Thanks for stopping by. We'll see you next week, and as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at BProKansasCity.
Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.
Hi, this is Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Baudette for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.